Here's the thing about the modern Mississippi. It's still full of surprises. I mean, this is a river as old as time. So what could there be left to know? Well, if you're geomorphologist Eric Carson, a whole lot.
It was a very tense time doing research. We had a binary solution set for our question. Does that surface dip to the east or does it dip to the west? Which is extremely atypical for us. That's the first and only research project I've been involved with where you had that clear of an answer. And so during the few weeks that the data was being collected, it was kind of tense, because if it dipped to the west, it would have been new information, but nothing earth-shaking. If it dipped to the east, then it opens up a whole new possibilities of what does this tell us about how the landscape used to look.
Turns out, it did dip to the east. And that is a really big deal. But to understand why, I have to tell you that Eric's research takes place around a town called Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. That's where the Mississippi River meets a tributary, the Wisconsin River. And what Eric's research uncovered is evidence of a very old and yet entirely new river.
My research indicates that rather than being two rivers that joined at that location, it was one river that flowed south to that location and then flowed east across what is today the Driftless area.
Wait, the Mississippi just took a left turn.
It did.
And flowed east.
And then off to the northeast up to what today we consider Green Bay and into the Lake Michigan lowlands and off to the St. Lawrence River.
And it emptied out into the Atlantic Ocean?
Yes.
That's a pretty big change of direction for a river. And then what happened? One day it just decided, nah, I'm rather head south.
Prior to the cycle of ice ages that have occurred over the last 2 million, 2.5 million years, there were quite a few rivers that were oriented in that direction across West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kentucky. There were a series of rivers that flowed north up into the St. Lawrence drainage. But once the glacier started forming, eventually they blocked that riverway. And so all these rivers that were flowing north that all of a sudden had their lower portions of the river valleys blocked by ice, large lakes dammed up. And the lakes filled up and filled up until they spilled over the lowest drainage divide.
It still just seems so incredible to think that the Mississippi once flowed, or at least part of it flowed, a different direction and to a different sea. How do you know this?
We know it first by our observations of the landscape.
What's it like? I mean, we're talking in a radio studio, so
right.
Really we should be standing on a riverbank.
We really should. And we'd want to go to Wyalusing State Park. There's an overlook at Wyalusing State Park that you're looking right down at the point where the Mississippi and the Wisconsin River come together. These big, broad rivers that are flat because of all the sand and gravel from the glaciers, but they're steep valley walls because the rivers have been around for millions of years, cutting down into the bedrock. And so you can see these beautiful features. You can see some of the smaller features that give us additional information that the Wisconsin River reversed its course.
Like what?
The first is that there's a very, very anomalous landform in the lower Wisconsin River Valley. So river valleys, of course, rivers flow downhill, and there are a whole series of surfaces associated with the rivers that generally dip in the direction that the rivers flow. So in the case of the Wisconsin River, there's at some depth, there's the bedrock floor of the valley. Up higher, on top of a whole series of sand and gravel, there's the actual river itself. And then there are higher surfaces that we call terraces that are former floodplains. In the case of the Wisconsin River, all of those dip downward to the west, just like you'd expect. But there's another feature in there, another terrace. It's a different kind of terrace. And rather than being built of sand and gravel, it's built of bedrock. And it's a type of terrace that we don't see in the Mid-Continent very often at all. And so the original underlying question was, what does this tell us about the landscape? Why is this very, very odd feature present? Lo and behold, when we took a close look at it, we were able to determine that the bedrock surface of that terrace dips to the east in the opposite direction of the Wisconsin River. And so it had to have been carved by a river flowing to the east.
But today, I imagine you use much more sophisticated data than just standing at the overlook of a river and looking at it.
Oh, absolutely. There is a newer mapping technology called LIDAR. LIDAR stands for light detection and ranging. It's a system where it's an airplane mounted system that lasers are shot at the ground. And from that, they create a digital elevation model of the Earth.
And how accurate can it be?
Well, with topographic maps, we're talking errors on the order of several feet. The new data that we got in, and we got this just in January of 2013, this is processed in GIS, Geographic Information Systems, and our GIS people in our office tell us that the new generation of LIDAR is accurate with vertical elevation to probably about 5 centimeters.
5 centimeters?
Yes.
Wow. It's
accurate enough when we see a digital representation of the landscape. If you zoom in on a field, you can tell if it was plowed or fallow when the LIDAR was shot. You can actually pick up the patterning of the furrows in a field.
Well, you can probably see the individual pieces of grass growing.
It's dangerous for us because we can open it up and lose about half a day zooming around and thinking of what different landforms are and coming up with research ideas that we might want to pursue.
If you thought Google Earth was distracting, wow.
Exactly, yes.
So it sounds to me like what you're describing is a whole new contemporary river science driven partly by new technologies.
Yes, it is. And it's bringing together new techniques. It's bringing together some previously proven techniques and bringing them together in ways that hadn't been used before.
Is it changing what we think a river is?
It is. It's changing how we understand the larger system. You know, science works with a balance of inductive and deductive reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Deductive starting with big picture questions and kind of trying to drill down to the underlying explanations and inductive starting with a very local question of what is this terrace and what does it tell us?
Mm.
And seeing how it spirals out. You know, in the case of this research, it's telling us that the river used to flow to the Gulf of St. Lawrence and into the North Atlantic. And we combine this with old research that indicated other rivers did that. And then we can start folding in just how much water used to flow to the North Atlantic instead of the Gulf of Mexico. And all of a sudden, we're getting new insights into how oceanic circulation happened over time. And that's one of the primary controls over climate change over time.
Hmm.
And so if we, you know, in this case, if we start with this very localized question of what did this terrace mean? All of a sudden, we're saying, hey, this might tell us something about global climate change.
Wow.
Whereas if you're starting with, let's look at global climate change, there's no way you're ever going to wind up looking at a terrace in southwestern Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great interplay of how science works that way, the back and forth of inductive and deductive reasoning.
So for you, these are scientific questions that are intellectually interesting. Do you have a feeling of attachment to the Mississippi? I mean, I imagine you spend a lot of time on it.
I very much do. Not having grown up here in Wisconsin, I've lived here for 15 years now, and it feels like home. But when I get down on the lower Wisconsin River, it feels like my real home. It feels like the place to be.
Geomorphologist Eric Carson. He works for the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey, and he teaches at the UW-Madison.